dog fans, and welcome to the Sound the Siren podcast, because everything matters, including Hood. Take it away.
Cookies!
Specifically, Cookies returned 90 yards for an interception, 90 yards for a go-ahead touchdown, in which the entirety of Husky Stadium could breathe at least a partial. Whew. Not completely out of the woods, but breathing room. So shouts to Mish Powell for the read on that play, as well as a chance to exercise another curse this weekend down at the library. As usual, I am your host, Hooligan7, my sign in this evening was Happy Hello. What the hell was that? Joined tonight by library crashers, usually known as Hood Husky. Hood, how are you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing very well, man. Can't complain at all. Doing very well. Glad we got the dub.
We can complain a little bit. We should complain just a little bit.
Yeah, you're going to catch it this episode. We're going to complain a little bit.
But ugly dubs are dubs. We can move right along into, we may be joined by some of our compatriots in flight. We will see. But beverages of choice for the evening. What do you got, sir?
Man, you know, it's non-alcoholic. I actually don't have water today. I've got some Canada Dry ginger ale.
Nice.
Yes, sir. Nice.
An integral part of a Moscow Mule or a dark and stormy, but ginger ale by itself is quite nice.
A flight.
Yes. Ooh, nice. There you go. I'm starting this evening. I hadn't had one yet this year, and I'm like, but before we get to Halloween, I actually do have to have some pumpkin beer. So I'm starting our pod this evening with an Elysian Dark of the Moon Pumpkin Stout. After that gets polished off, I'm going to move into the Elysian Punkuccino, which is a coffee pumpkin ale. I may be up till 1 a.m, but oh well. We can go ahead and move into Stupid Tweets, as sponsored by Kevin King. Hood, you got any you want to call out in our Stupid Tweets for the week?
I will say I just got a usual suspect, man. It's Go Ducks. That's GEAUX. So as if he's from Louisiana. But his tweet says, "What a Saturday. Oregon dominates Wazoo. USC loses to Utah. Arrogant fans melt down. UW pretty much loses to a 1-5 team. Bo jumps Knicks, May, and Williams in the Heisman race. Oregon retakes best spot in the pack. Beavers somehow lose bye week." There are a lot of dashes and bullet points there that are terrible. But how do you pretty much lose to a team? And, yeah, let's check those Heisman odds out for Bo Nix. How about that?
Still think Mike's ahead of him.
It's ridiculous, man.
And they're not in the lead. They have a loss, and we don't.
And we don't. Retweet if your team is undefeated.
I did. Did you?
I sure did.
I don't think any of the Ducky fans got to do that. Speaking of that particular program, we'll go with a tweet from literally 4 hours ago, and it's from at Oregon Football. Full force Game 8 uniform combo, showing off a black helmet with like carbon fiber looking silver wings, a white jersey with green, you know, wings and new numbers and letters, and black pants. Remind you, we're not going to do the predictions around the conference quite yet, but in case you didn't notice, Oregon is on the road at Rice-Eccles this weekend in Salt Lake City playing the University of Utah, who's one of their primary school colors is black.
Black.
Like, what's next? They're going to play Washington playing, you know, wearing, you know, gold and white and gold, or I mean, real Ducks do actually have some purple on the wings. So, well, yeah. I mean, good Lord.
They are the best content for this segment. I swear, I look around, you know, I'm in some national GCs and I follow a lot of Pac-12, Big Ten accounts and schools. And there is just nothing like the ridiculousness that comes out of Mallard Twitter.
Well, the funny thing was, literally breaking news, in my quote tweet of Oregon's, you know, and I brought out the classic, and I guess it was originally from Stanford about the can't spell dumb blank without ducks. Our buddy one time 86 fly at the barbecue says, I love you all when y'all use the Stanford sign, like you came up with it. Fly at the barbecue. I guarantee you Oregon was not the program that came up with Huck the Fuskies. Washington State, no, it wasn't you either. That was actually Seattle U during the basketball rivalry back in the 1950s. So yeah, mm-hmm. Calling originality or come on now.
I mean, and you stole Skull from Colorado. So let's be real here.
Yeah, there's that. And then also the other one is, I had a little bit of a back and forth with somebody I usually get along with, and that's at Fight On Rusty, who had to comment on my Operation Babs reverse Babs with the Trojan Husky, or the Husky kind of Trojan horse outside of the LA Coliseum. Ah, inside joke content. Good stuff leads to a ton of interaction. Don't know if y'all noticed or if you went through and like audited all my followers, I would guarantee you that probably about 80 or 90% of my followers are Washington Huskies fans. So yes, it's an inside joke, but it's also just delivering content for the majority of my follower base. Crazy.
A concept. If you go up and down his page, who's he tweeting for?
Mostly USC.
USC.
I'm not trying to big game boomer and send out bullshit spreadsheets every week and trying to be some national expert. I talk about the Dogs and I peripherally or, you know, secondarily talk about the schools in this conference and college football at large. But like my account, this podcast, it is UW first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and then kind of everything else on an as needed or as to laugh at basis. Come on now.
We'll get to USC soon. Oh yeah. We're going to get to USC soon.
They're having some enough problems as it is without trying to
worry about your own house. Uh-huh. Cause that kitchen getting a little smoky. That fire detector going off now.
Yeah. A Utah team that had really struggled to do much of anything against anybody with a pulse, and yet all of a sudden they're able to just move it right up and down the field on the Trojans. Wonder how that happened. All right, let's go ahead and move along into our this will be the complaining segment, and talk a little bit about what happened this past Saturday night at Husky Stadium. You and I were in attendance and sitting right next to each other for a large part of this. So your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we both had our head in our hands for whenever the offense was on the field. But I'll start off offensively. I think all the listeners and everybody that follows any of the content that I come out with on Twitter, man, you guys are very familiar with how I feel about Ryan Grubb the last 3 weeks. I feel like he's obviously an amazing offensive coordinator, extremely aggressive. But we've yet to see him, you know, make adjustments outside the UCLA game, storming back in that second half. When somebody has his number, it just is a very tough go for him. I do think the Arizona game, he made some adjustments using Jeremy Bernard in the way he did. But obviously there's some play calling issues in the fourth quarter of Arizona. But then you know, with the situation, you're up 11 versus Oregon. Two possessions, you go three and out because you're spamming the pass. And then this week, they're spamming A-gap blitzes on first and second down. Sometimes they're showing it, and then they're hustling their guys to kind of hook to curl. There was no attack of the seams. The one time you do see the seam attacked was, a 10-plus yard play to Westie. You know, we didn't force them to stop doing what they were doing. And I think both of us felt like once we went into halftime, I think I said it to you, I was like, oh yeah, this defense is easy to beat. We probably didn't prepare for You know, that A-gap pressure, we probably didn't prepare for that. I'm sure Dan and Tosh hit Kenny up and was like, hey, you know, this is how you can get to them with your personnel. This is where they may struggle, et cetera. So coming off a bye week, you know, you expected maybe some early struggles or for Dilly and his squad. I think DC's Brian Ward.
I believe so, yeah. Who I believe was at Wazoo last year, and obviously the Cougs miss him at this point.
Oh, yeah. And I think that somebody posted there's a tie between him and DeBoer as well. So, I just think offensively, man, you know, it's just same-ish, different toilet. You know what I mean? Like, it's been the same thing the past 3 weeks. What I want to see is I want to see our offense, you know, obviously explosive in the way it is, but let's establish a running game. Let's show that we can adjust. So offensively, I was a little frustrated. Didn't get the running game going. You know, you got weapons, scat weapons, quick weapons that you didn't use in the running game to get to the outside. If you're spamming A and B gap blitzes, why are you not using your fast guys to get to the edge of defenses? You're using kind of your power guy, your one cut guy, for that. So that was a little frustrating. I'll transition to the defense, man. I guess I'll let you want to go about the offense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do defense. Think, and this is, yeah, thank you. And I'll jump in real quick. And I do think part of it is that I'm not saying this completely to defend Grubb. I wouldn't by no stretch of any imagination say that this was in his top games at Washington and probably his worst game since he's been our offensive coordinator. I do definitely think, you know, to my mind, one of the clear miss, you know, we're clearly missing Jalen McMillan and Jeremy Bernard, and that with Jalen McMillan working in the middle of the field and the slants and the ends, that's in the space that they're vacating, bringing that pressure, or, you know, if Mike spots it, you know, if they're actually bringing pressure from the A gap, that's going to open up that space, or the quick hot, having Jeremy to dump off, or using Jeremy on some of the things out of the backfield. Again, getting another athlete out in space, one of the quick athletes. Their absence was certainly noteworthy in this game, but and I think something I said to you in the stands Saturday night, I think, or maybe it was a thought that I had heading back up to my car after the game, was Jalen Polk is perfectly capable and has demonstrably shown an affinity to work the middle of the field as well. And certainly, you know, I think Denzel Boston got probably his most run and certainly his most targets of the year. And you can put Denzel outside and, you know, kind of move JP back a little bit into that Jalen role until Jalen McMillan is back, and run some of those drags, some of those ins, some of those slants, to make it a little easier. And then I'll shout you out, because you pointed this out, that it wasn't until late in the game that we really started moving the pocket on kind of some sprint outs to get Mike away from that pressure. So, and I also don't think, you know, I think it was clear that Mike wasn't fully himself either.
I agree. And I think, I just think that second half, we got a little bit of PTSD from that Rome, when Rome was opening the touchdown. For the touchdown, we had the pressure, and, you know, it's a tip ball. I think Grubb at that point was like, oh, or even maybe Mike, you know, communicated with him and was like, hey, you know, I don't have clear lanes across the middle, and potentially Grubb ran with it and was like, okay, well, when, because I think I was also mentioning, you know, let's get some sprint outs to smooth the pocket. But I was like, we're not getting meshy at all. You know, we're not running any meshes. If they're bringing that pressure, meshes, you got two hots on drags. You got a 5 yard out from your outside receiver potential, which we were hitting. That's what they were kind of throwing. They were throwing outside. They weren't hitting a lot of the guys across the middle, which you break one tackle and it could be a touchdown if you're bringing cover zero all day. No, there was no snags across the, no snags, no curl, no post curls, nothing across the middle. And I think we didn't see any throws across the middle after that Rome tip. So I just felt like maybe they just were a little nervous to do that. When we did run anything quick, it was, you know, 8 to 12 yard curls or 5 yard outs, 8 yard outs. And those were tough throws. I think I also
saw a lot of, like, I think we were talking about it, that a lot of it was to the field side from opposite hash.
Let one of them corners squat on it. You know what I mean? And it's a tough throw. So, yeah, I mean,
and Mike certainly has the arm for it, but
You don't want to do, because just, you know, personally, I think I mentioned it to you again. I was like, if I was one of these corners, and that's how you know their corners weren't good and they didn't trust them. If I was one of those corners, I would have said, forget my DC. I'm squatting on one of these. They don't have time to run double moves. So I'm just going to squat on an out. I'm going to squat on a curl. So,
and make no mistake about it, we are very fortunate that that performance was against Arizona State University and not a better team in this conference. Because if we have one of those against an even middle tier of this conference, we're going to be in a whole lot of trouble in that football game.
I'll just, and it's the last thing I'll say on the offense. I do think that, and this is what I said pregame for Oregon, is when you don't have the talent on defense to stop our offense, you have to do one of two things. You got to bring three and drop eight, or you got to spam the blitz. And so you caught Arizona just doing the bring three, drop eight, occasionally bring four, but they put a big umbrella on the defense, force it to dink and dunk, which was a little easier for Grubb to kind of deal with. But then you get Arizona State, who doesn't have the talent to hang with our receivers, but they have a better D-line than Arizona does. So they trusted their front to get pressure. I don't see the more talented, better teams in the conference doing either one of those game plans on defense. So I think we're going to see the, you know, the typical points and all that kind of stuff. I just think you only run into these type of game plans on defense when you have like significantly inferior talent on the opposite side and the DC has to compensate with scheme.
Yeah, I would say that I agree with that. I think the one caveat to that, or somebody that could do something similar or even not necessarily spam blitz, but bring pressure and cause problems for us, the game that I'm probably now most worried about the rest of the way is Utah on November 11th, because that D-line in particular, what is it, Junior Ellis?
I think John Ellis.
Or Jonah Ellis, sorry. it can cause us some problems. I want us to have as full a complement of our playmakers, Jalen McMillan, Jeremy Bernard, for that one, for that very reason. But yeah, let's move on to the defense and on the right side. With as much as they were on the field, I believe it was like a 10 or 15 minute time of possession advantage for Arizona State. Given all of that, this defense allowed 7 points.
Yeah, man, I said great job by the defense. A lot of people were like, well, they ran for this and they did this and they had time. At the end of the day, time of possession that long and your offense not scoring any points and your offense not even taking up long drives, man, they held their own. I don't care how many yards you get in between the 20s. If you're stopping people in the red zone, and Dillingham even said it, he was like, and this is just part of personnel understanding. People were like, oh, yeah. If they would have just took the field goals, or if they would have, they couldn't, because if they went field goal, Dillingham even said it post game, they probably were going to block. We were probably going to block all the field goals because they didn't Elijah have enough body. Elijah got his
hand on one and he doinked it off the upright leg.
Then he doinked it. And it's because the kicker is rushed, because, I mean, Dillingham said that they don't have enough bodies, enough 280 plus pound bodies to put there. And you can just bull rush their special teams unit. So that's an understanding of personnel. That's not they left points on the board. No, that was they had no other option. But defensively, man, yeah, I think they it was a prime example of bend but don't break. Allow a lot of stuff in between the 20s. I told you guys pregame, you know, Cam Scataboo is probably the hardest guy to tackle individually, probably the hardest runner, maybe not the best athletic profile, but hands down the hardest runner in the conference. In my opinion, and a bowling ball at that. You know, you're the hardest runner, and you have that specific type of build. Yep. That's a guy that ran for 1,700 yards, caught the ball 350 yards receiving, I believe, last year at Sac State, averaged 7 yards a carry. So that was a dog, and we held him in check, essentially.
And DeCarlos Brooks is not a small human either.
Not small either.
5'10", 220. Like, those are Diesel. Big. Those are power backs, and to this point, okay, like, yeah, in general, do you want to give up 4.7 yards per carry for the game? No. But when you're also without Tulilatuli Gesanoa, one of your primary defensive tackles, like, it was, we still have yet to give up a 20-yard run. this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's
which was our weakness last year.
Mm-hmm. Our bigger weakness last year was the passing game, and
hey, what did the social media team do? They showed off them boys because of how hard they've been working and the progress they made. Strap season, clicker ticket, seatbelt committee, all of that.
Yep.
Elijah and, Jackson.
Yeah, I will also say it. I'm not going to call out all of the stupid tweets that I saw because I don't follow a ton of Arizona State people complaining about the PI that they thought, oh, this was a game changing play that should have been called on Jabbar. Not mentioning at all Jalen Polk getting tackled at basically the 1 yard line that would either have been a first and goal and very short yardage goal to go or a touchdown. The ridiculous pass interference that got called on Raylan Gofork for literally picture perfect coverage across the middle, or the one that they picked up on Rome when he was breaking past the sticks for what would have been a first down on a third down conversion. Oh no! But they're in the bag for Washington. Get the
that was ridiculous.
Out of here.
And then just instead of just being like, "Oh man, you know, I didn't notice all that," or it was defending the points, and it is what it is, man. That was a wild reffed game.
Oh, completely. Yes.
That was Stupid Angel Hernandez.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like the one that I love is that like there's pictures. I'm like, yeah, Giles had, like of the PI that got picked up. I'm like, yeah, Giles just got a hold of the jersey. But in the shots that I've seen of it, it's fairly clear that the offensive play, the receiver also has a fairly strong hold on Jabbar.
They picked up some flags that were just BS, but even, I mean, to be honest, including the Jabbar, you know, hold, but the one you're talking about with Rome, it was funny because they called it. Dillingham runs to the ref and says, well, it's uncatchable. He can't catch that. He's not even throwing to that guy. Mike was in the pocket when he threw it. If you're picking that flag up, you then have to call intentional grounding. And they picked the flag up, but they didn't call intentional grounding. So it was just them picking the flag up.
Well, it wasn't that uncatchable. Rome was in the, like, to my
Rome was breaking out.
He was breaking out and he got held. And the only reason that it went, like, landed three, four yards away from him is because he couldn't get to the ball because the receiver, the defense at least that's a defensive holding.
At least that's what I thought it was. I thought it was defensive hold because he was holding them before the ball was even out.
Right.
So. Yeah, but
and then on the JP overall, one where they tackled him two seconds before the ball got
two
there.
Two people. He got a stiff arm one to get him off of him, and another one jump on his man. That was wild. But the defense D line, you know, we like you said, we definitely missed Thule. They were able to really key in on how disruptive MJ was. So they just kind of keyed in on MJ, got him turned around a lot, doubled him a lot, and you know. As much as I love a lot of those guys on that line, they just were not showing up. Looking like, and you know, this ain't me, but there was a lot of Jags out there, just being honest. I need you guys. We're going to need you guys to step up just in case you don't have your ringleader and Thule. So D-line definitely disappointed me. Their offensive line also, too. I don't know if there's a penalty or not, but whenever Cam was wrapped up, a lot of their offensive line was full on bear hugging and grabbing jerseys and pulling us off of Cam. I don't know if that's legal or not, but whatever. Linebackers, I would say you guys brought it physically, but you know a lot of those missed tackles. We were saved, you know, by our secondary again. Our corners in pass coverage, I guess, plus me. 50 hybrid, but our safety's tackling. Asa coming up with his club, swinging through people's legs. Cam Fab laying the wood, wrapping up. Dom laying the wood, wrapping up. And something personal that you guys have heard me talk about is, you know, and I tie this into Grubb in his game plan, is you got these boys on the field for 37 minutes. And we saw what ended up happening to Cam Fab. And those types of things don't happen. First of all, if you don't miss a bunch of tackles, because he was wrapped up, got free, and then Cam Fab had to like help clean the play up, so missed tackles. But then those things don't happen if you help these dudes stay off the field. So just a product of a whole bunch of BS. But yeah, defense held it up. Shout out to the secondary. Showed me the first time they won a game on defense, in my opinion.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I was about to say that, like, it shows us that our defense, like, it's yet another case in point of our defense can, you know, maybe not, it's not the dominant, it's not, you know, the death row, like, we're just gonna, like, you're just not gonna score against us. But this defense, when it situationally, when this defense needs to make a play, or as was the case basically for 60 minutes on Saturday night, the defense continually needed to make plays when it counted. And they answered the call every damn time.
I think the mentality of the defense is definitely death row. I don't know if they have as many alphas, and I don't know if they have, like, the overall NFL talent, but the mentality of that defense, the first thing Zotub tweeted was, he was like, death row gonna slide every time. So they have that mentality of, like, this is the standard. I'm going to try to play to it. I'm going to play with my hair on fire. It's just not necessarily as talented, I would say. Or even, to be honest, that was a Jimmy Lake and PK run defense. So schematically, it was, you know, a little bit more aggressive.
But by the same token, Cal's the only team to... Well, Cal and Oregon are the only two teams to go above 30, and Cal did it with a bunch of stuff in garbage time against freshmen and walk-ons.
And then I think Arizona was 24, so low 20s. Everybody else didn't even get 20.
Yeah, and...
And Arizona got the 24 because...
with a minute left.
With a minute left, because Ryan Grubb spamming the pass. So the defense slid.
And due to an unfortunate fumble in the red zone, I'm not going to blame Jeremy for it, but...
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, this team is that close that that's a 3-touchdown game at that point, if we, or a 17-point game. But yeah, no, meanwhile, like, the defense is getting it done. And briefly, to talk about that Arizona game, and what has that Arizona team done since that?
Sheesh. I'm glad we caught Fafita when he first on his first game.
Agreed. Well, I think that's a good little segue to move in. And this is going to be slightly different. We're going to do this a little differently on Sound the Siren this week, just due to some availabilities. It's going to be a conversation. This is breaking news, and we're adjusting on the fly. Tonight's a conversation with Hood and I. We'll probably release it as an individual episode. And then tomorrow night, I'm going to be joined by a couple of other compadres to get their thoughts and views going forward. So a double Sound the Siren pod this week. But let's go ahead and chat about what's going on in the conference. And it starts with and I will also say shouts to the conference. It's not a perfect schedule, but it's staggered starts. It's a 12:30, it's a 1 o'clock, a 4 o'clock, a 4:30, a 5, and a 7:30. Like, it's not, hey, we're gonna throw four games on all at the same time and, you know, dilute the viewership. But starting with a absolute barn burner, I'm not sure if that's legal in Utah, but we'll see. There's a lot of barns, and not as much necessarily alcohol to be imbibed that might be used as the fuel to start the fire. Or maybe there's more because there's less people to drink. There's less people that are drinking it.
And we know Oregon don't travel, so.
And that is the number 8 Ducks, who are a 6.5-point favorite on the road at number 13 Utah, with the over under at 47.5. Hood, what do you think about that one, bud?
I will say 47.5 is nice. I like that a lot. If I had to pick over or under, I would say under for sure.
I agree.
But I think 47.5 is a really solid number. I got Utah on this one. I would say after the UW game, I felt strong about, you know, kind of Oregon potentially winning out, maybe running into Utah, running Oregon State, having tough games. But after watching Utah versus USC, their grit all season through injuries, I think personally having the best, one of the better head coaches in the country. You lost Lander Barton during the game, and you still, you know, with all the adversity, you still pulled it out. So I think they're the better team. Not the most athletic, all the, not the most explosive on offense and defense. I think they're just the better program at this point. And they haven't, what, lost at home since, but
I think
2018, I think.
It might be, so, I mean, like non-COVID, I think the last loss at home was 2018 to
who?
Us.
Come on now, come on.
To that, to that program that owns the University of Utah.
Yes, Sirski. I got Utah in that. I got a nice little defensive battle. That's gonna be, I think that's gonna be probably the game of the week.
I think the game day is gonna be there. This is an absolute barn burner of a football game. I do think while Utah is showing some signs of life on the offensive side of the ball, I do think some of that can be attributed to they showed signs of life against an absolutely abysmal defense that's talented, but is just an absolute like shit show. Grinch gonna Grinch.
Grinch gonna Grinch.
I'm gonna call this one. I hate to do this, but I seriously hope that this goes about as well as my 63-21 prediction of the UW game last week. But I'm going to call this one 28-24, 27-24 Ducks and those ugly ass uniforms.
I like how you whispered that.
I don't feel good about it.
I mean, I you know, I'm not going to say like it's like 80-20 Utah. I definitely think it's like 55-45 Oregon, but that still favors Utah.
Yeah, well, the home field, I mean, I think, yeah, like their pass rush is going to, I think the difference between this, you know, Oregon on the road in this game versus Oregon on the road at Washington is I think Utah's pass rush is, to this point in the season, is certainly levels above, or at least a level or two above what.
And they tackle.
And they tackle. I mean, this is I mean, every year Utah is just slept on and slept on and slept on, and they continue to just show up, and they're doing it right now without their, with a safety at running back and without their star quarterback.
Sione Vaki.
Yes. But let's move on into the 1 p.m. game, and that is number 24, USC. Who is an 11-point favorite going on the road to Cal with an over-under at 68. Number one, I'm laughing about UCLA is currently ranked higher than USC. By a spot.
How is USC still ranked? You get blown out. I mean, Utah's a good loss if that exists. But you get blown out and you lost back-to-back. That's crazy.
I will say I think USC does enough to win this. I think 68 is correct. I think that there are going to be a lot of points scored in this game on both sides. I do think it would be hysterically funny for them to lose at Cal. That said, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. I'm going to say that this is USC. Like this, this one feels like a 45-35, maybe 45-27 kind of thing. But I by no means think that USC figures things out on defense and keeps Cal off the scoreboard. But I think that USC just scores more.
Yeah, I'm totally there with you. I definitely think it's a close game. Ends up being, you know, a two possession game late. So, you know, up three, the gap in the game is 7-3 the whole game. And then, you know, Cal doesn't score late. And then USC decides to put it away with a, you know, up seven, kick a field goal, or up three, score a touchdown and puts the game away. So a 45-35 type of a game, but much closer than that. A loss and a win for sure.
Yep. All right. We'll skip past the 4 p.m. kick because we'll talk about that at the end. And which moves us on to a 4:30 p.m. game on ABC, and that is Colorado traveling to the aforementioned number 23 UCLA Bruins, who are a 17-point favorite with the over-under at 62.5. Number one, UCLA being a 17-point favorite against anybody is
wild.
It's wild because that offense is...
It's 68, you said?
62.5.
Oh, that's under.
Yeah, that's an under because Yeah, I think that this could be as ugly as Arizona State coming into Washington turned out last weekend. This one has one of those, like, either USC actually, or excuse me, UCLA scores a bunch of points because Colorado just can't stop UCLA on the ground, and Ethan Garber's basically just gets to maybe, you know, dink and dunk occasionally when needed to just for a little bit of variety when to mix it up from UCLA just spamming the run. But I don't think this is going to be a fun day for Shadur.
Yeah, man, that 60 point, no way. Neither team is scoring over 24 points. And it might be 24 to 3, 24 to 7, 24 to 10, something like that. If you struggled and gave up 7 sacks to Oregon, oh my God. UCLA coming for double digit sacks this game. Take Shador out.
Latu might have 5 by himself.
You know what I'm saying? Man, this is going to be tough. He going, but I think, isn't Colorado coming off a bye?
They are.
So yeah. I think you can at least like make you can help the game plan, you know, probably get out quicker throws because UCLA's weakness is their secondary.
Yep.
You can kind of get out quicker throws and game plan for that. But I mean, once you start to try to take your shots when you're maybe 10 points behind, it's going to be tee off season. So,
yep. All right, let's move along to the 5 p.m. kick on the Pac-12 network. This one is going to be interesting, and Washington State is a 6-point favorite on the road at Arizona State with the over-under at 51. I actually think that this is an opportunity that for Washington State to cleanse the palate a little bit and get a little bit right. I think Arizona State's got enough that Washington State's defense has been shown to be suspect for sure. That said, with Arizona's, despite all of their opportunities last week, Arizona's, like, I would say Washington has a significantly better defense than Washington State. But Arizona State still only managed 7 points. This is, I think, a get-right game for the Cougs. I could see them. I think the Cougs are going to win this one by 10, 14, 17, because I just don't think ASU is there. That I think ASU is well-coached, and I think they're going to do some things that are going to be disruptive to Cam Ward. But I could see this being like a Ward has 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, or 4, you know, 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and it's not pretty by any stretch in the imagination, but it's enough to win comfortably in the desert.
It was so funny. The first thing, the first thing that came in my head, and I don't know why, but it was just when Austin Powers goes, "And I'm spent." I think that's ASU. You know, they wasted so much energy playing us. I think they show up to Wazoo. Maybe the first half of the first quarter is going to be them trying to ball out. And it's just like, bro, look, I'm tired. I didn't get a bye week coming into this week. You know, I can't game plan the same way. I just think this is going to be Wazoo getting right. Like you said, I think it's 17 plus. I think they're going to beat them by 17 plus. And we're going to be mad that we didn't do it to them. So I definitely think this is.
Oh, I am, because I be spent. There's not a program the only program I dislike more than Arizona State in this conference is the team we played just prior to playing Arizona State. So it's actually more related to a different sport and rivalry than football with Arizona State. But I don't like losing to them. I think the Arizona State fan base for the most part is Oregon with nice weather. But we can move right along. The final game of the night is equally interesting to the first game of the day, and that is number 11 Oregon State, who is a 3.5-point favorite going on the road to Arizona with the over under at 56.5. This one I think is a very interesting ball game. Hood, what do you think about this one?
That one's tough. I'm gonna take Arizona. I think you said Oregon State's home.
No, it's at Zona. It's in Tucson.
So being
night game in the desert.
So Oregon having -6 just means that Vegas thinks they're technically 3 points better. Home foot advantage. I got Arizona, man.
3.5 Yeah, I think I agree. I would go Arizona straight up because the thing that, as fun as what Oregon State has done so far this year, despite the 3-point loss to the Cougs, that game wasn't that close. But where Oregon State has shown a weakness this year is, honestly, is defending the run. And I'm blanking on the other running back at Arizona's name, but Jonah Coleman, like they've got
DJ Williams.
Between DJ Williams and Jonah Coleman, Arizona can run the ball and punish you when doing it.
And then who's guarding T-Mac? Who's guarding Jacob Cowing in play action or one-on-one shots after Jonah?
Once Arizona has established the run. I actually like Arizona. I think Arizona makes a statement in this game, and I think this could be like about a 14-17 plus point Arizona win, and I think this vaults Arizona back, not into the conference conversation, but Arizona's gonna wreck some shit, and that's gonna, I think, start with the Beavers. But at least I think this gets Arizona, if not into the top 25, very, very close to it.
This has storm the field vibes. You know what I mean? Like last minute field goal, last minute touchdown, Fafita running with his helmet off. You know what I mean? This has kind of got.
I don't know. It does, but I don't know if it's that close.
Ooh, whiskey.
I don't know that, like, if they're able to establish the run with Coleman and are susceptible to play action because Arizona's been effective running the ball.
It depends on who they're going to start, because Fish is like, yeah, I mean, we're going to make it a game time decision. If they start Jaden Delora, stupidest decision ever.
If they start Jaden Delora, I'm going to take Oregon State. I take Oregon State by 10 or 14 with Jaden Delora out there. But
these are the two most consistent teams right now. Like the two teams that you know what you're going to get. There ain't going to be no gimmicks on the other side. And they're playing the best football of any of the Pac-12 teams right now, the most consistent football. They're two teams that have obvious glaring identities. I think everybody else is kind of, you know, week to week. Oh, I score a lot of points, or I don't score a lot of points. My defense show up. My defense don't show up. My offense show up. My offense don't show up. I think Arizona and Oregon State have been the two most consistent teams. Whether that means they're the best teams or not, or the worst teams or not, it's not the same conversation. But they're just predictable every week. And I think Arizona's ceiling is a lot higher, for sure.
You can support this podcast at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/soundthesirenpod UW/support. Thanks. Go Dogs. And moving into the more fun than the game was Saturday night, to be honest, or at least until Mish got his hands on the football. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Keona Wilhite and Jackson Colick. We'll start with Keona since he's going to be on campus a little sooner. Keona Wilhite is a 6'5", 240-pound defensive lineman, a three-star .8714 composite out of South Point Catholic down in Tucson, Arizona. Hood, what did you see, or what do you, you know, what stood out to you about Keona's film when you took a look at it?
Extremely physical. I think one thing that I really enjoy is how they got, I think him and Kirk's are relatively similar, but you got two kind of already P5 body builds already. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think Noah's going to have to gain a little bit of weight, but this is a P5 body, a guy who could easily be 270. One thing I noticed was he's extremely violent. Like I said, extremely physical. I think an 80 and a half inch wingspan. Ooh. So it's got some length as well. 6'5".
Long.
Yeah, and plays opposite of Elijah Rushing. And at the end of the day, it's not just Elijah Rushing getting to the quarterback. It's definitely a dynamic duo for sure. So getting Keona is a big win for us. We stop in AZ again. We're really kind of, I'm not going to say dominating AZ, but when it comes to edges, we got a lot of love in Arizona. Yeah. So really like this film. Wraps, tackles well already. Now, you don't dislike guys with these big hits and these shoulder pad tackles, but those are guys that you're going to have to train up to not miss tackles at the next level. He already wraps up, drives you into the ground. So yeah, and he's off to a good senior season too. Yeah. So
the strength, not only in his certainly the power moves are more developed than the finesse moves as a pass rusher. But to go with that, the strength that he demonstrates, and where I really am excited about Keona's potential, is not only as a pass rusher, but also kind of the versatility that he could bring to us, both as an edge defender and somebody that could, you know, pop inside, kick inside a little bit as a three tech and be like that pass rush D tackle. But particularly I want, like, in my ideal mind's eye, he plays, you know, maybe like, or in particular, and shouts to Roman and Lars on the Lockdown Huskies podcast, because they spotted this as well, where he's probably going to be, you know, when we bring like that Porsche package where it's, you know, the edge, all basically edge rushers as the down lineman, one of the guys that kicks inside, but also being that, you know, kind of, I'm not going to say he's quite the athlete from a speed standpoint that Jeremiah Martin was, but that real edge setting run defender, and with that ability to wrap up and like the strength of his, basically the grasp or the clutch when a ball carrier enters his zone. He's you know, to talk about, like, I don't know whether it's a military term or something, you know, I zone of control. I play Civ occasionally when I'm not playing sports games on the on various platforms. It's the, you know, that like, oh, somebody's in my area, I'm gonna grab him and he's not going farther than that. And yeah, with the frame that he has already, mm-hmm, this guy, to your point of, you know, he's at 240 now, or listed at 240 now, could easily see him playing 270, 280. This guy with Ron McKeefrey, I think you can put good weight on him without him losing the quickness that he has. This is the kind of athlete that messes up stretch run play, you know, outside run plays in a hurry, because he's there.
One thing I did see was, I didn't see like a crazy get off, but, and I hate to make this kind of comparison, but he reminds me a little of a kind of like Jordan Birch at Oregon. Just kind of that, I was thinking, you know, with a guy like him, a guy like Kirks, who could also put on 25, 30 pounds, you know, we can get back to a lot of the rush three, drop eight, you know, and you know, this is why a guy like Jericho Johnson's so important, because if you can get that run stopper and pass rusher on the interior, that versatile guy who's got some crazy good size and length on the inside, you know, imagining like Kirks Durfee with Keona, and, you know, Jericho on the inside. Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You can bring all types of varied pressures. You protect your linebackers. So, oh, yeah. The size for me that Schmidt is getting on this D-line, this edge D-line class, has been really, really impressive for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I like the verse.
Jericho, we need you.
Jericho Johnson takes this defense in this class to just another level with what he brings to the table. I think we're in a good spot. I'm not an expert on that. But I would go from right now, I would say between, with the film that I've seen from Kirks, from Keona, from Mana Bulabulavu, with Omar Khan, like this is at least a
from Noah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is at least right now at minimum a B or a B plus. You add Jericho Johnson to this mix. That is cooking that's cooking with jet fuel. That's not just cooking, like I said, that's not just cooking Man. With gas, that's cooking with jet fuel.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom goes the quarterback. Or the ball carrier. And I mentioned it. So Kiona is a 2024. We'll move on to the 2025 commit that we got, which is Jackson Colick, who is a 6'4", 215-pound, three-star quarterback at an 8.8578 out of Laguna Beach down in California. I think he's going to my opinion of the film is that he is not going to be a 0.85783 star for long. This kid is going to rise. I would say in terms of a comp, I don't think he's as fluid a runner as the player in question, but certainly a similar throwing motion and style, with honestly some more bullets in the gun than the player in question. I think this is kind of a bigger or it's in some ways a bigger Bo Nix. Like I said, with more of just that rifle. And it's not necessarily his down the field throws, although there's some similar trajectory in the highlights that I saw to how Bo delivers the ball down the field. But for me, what really stood out was some of his throws in the intermediate, receivers or tight ends running, some outs or hitches or short slants where he's got a small window and he is just rifling it in there. But what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree, man. Natural arm talent. I don't know if people will get it, but he's a quarterback's quarterback. I think you can tell when a guy like eats, sleeps, breathes, the position. And I was looking for it, but I felt like I saw somebody say that he was clocked this year at 20 miles an hour. Now, I wouldn't say I saw that top end in the film, but you do see there's no hesitation to run when it's available at all. I do think he's going to be one of the faster rising quarterbacks once kind of the offseason hits and going into his senior year, once he kind of gets on the circuit, if he does at all. Kind of hope he doesn't so he can kind of stay under the radar. But yeah, I think this is going to be kind of similarly to, Keenholz, where it's like you start off as a mid-tier three-star and then you work your way up. But he's already got a decent list of offers. So I think what they were waiting for was maybe to see the production side after maybe seeing him at camps going into his junior year. But having an explosive junior year, and I bet you now that he's committed to us,
everybody's
the respect Ryan Grubb has, the respect Kalen DeBoer has, people are going to be knocking at our door. They're going to direct eyes there.
How many times have we seen that in the history of the Washington recruiting across multiple staffs that we offer, and then suddenly the floodgates open?
People love our eval, man.
And when you get the kind of production that this coaching staff does from the quarterback position, can you blame them? Not really. I haven't worked in a collegiate coaching staff by any stretch of the imagination. But I can't imagine that there's a ton on the film that a coach would be like, yeah, no, that's not something that we would be very intrigued to have in our program. I will say on the subject of him running the ball, that's something that I think he's going to be a little bit more coached out of doing, because he also has a little bit of,
agreed.
He's got a little, I don't, not the top end speed, or at least I didn't see it, but he's got a little bit of Jake Locker in him where he is not shy at all about he's got that, I'm a quarterback, but wait, my brain's going to short circuit and fuck that. I'm a fullback. I'm going to just run some dude over. And I love that want to, I also don't want my starting quarterback
trying to run people over
because generally at some point a quarterback is going to break down, and I want him not to have a damaged shoulder from trying to throw it through somebody. I'd rather he threw the ball through somebody than ran through somebody.
Some Looney Tunes shit. What I really like too, just if you just monitor the stat line, you can just tell that he protects the ball. High completion percentage. He's balling this year, but if you look at the touchdown interception ratio, and a lot of, I think there's a 3-game stretch right now where he's going crazy right now. I'm really excited about him. Having a room with like him, Mac, and even like it was Haskell, Austin yep. Johnson. That's going to be quite the similar body types, similar throwing motions, similar throwing talent, arm talent. So that is going to be one wild competition. Obviously, he gets in after everybody, but that's going to be one wild and fun quarterback room to watch and monitor.
Agreed.
For sure.
Agreed. And it's certainly a situation with Austin. Like, if Austin takes over next year, the year following it with what this coaching staff and this offense could do, it's not inconceivable that Austin could leave early and that Jackson becomes the heir apparent mm-hmm. a year or 2 years later. You know, Austin plays for 2-3 years and Jackson takes over from there. The talent's there.
And shout out to this offensive staff locking up their quarterback early in the 2025 class. That's one of the main things that gets other guys coming over. Now, I don't know how popular he is and all that kind and those types of things, but like I said, if he gets out there on the circuit this offseason, makes a name for himself, starts getting those Elite 11 looks, dominates like maybe even 7-on-7, those types of things, you're definitely going to see a whole bunch of kids around the country, especially skill players on offense, running backs, receivers, tight ends, and potentially offensive linemen, definitely kind of wanting to play with him. So excited for that, locking that up early.
I mean, it's not like this offensive system would be appealing for wide receivers at all.
At all, bro. Not even a little bit, you know? Or quarterbacks, you know?
Crazy. Like we've been saying it. It's an example, and like I think you made this point in the pre-show, it's like rankings are one thing, but watch the film. You can't tell me like that.
Please
watch film. And yes, there are times where the film matches up to the rankings and there is a reason that somebody is a 5-star. But how many times also lately have we seen highly, 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 highly ranked recruits flame out?
Jeez, there's a bunch of dudes out there, man, that have the exact same film, exact same athleticism as some of these 5-star dudes, and they just don't have the money for the circuit or didn't find a team in time, or they're hitting the weights instead of doing the 7-on-7 or running track instead of doing it or playing baseball. So it is what it is, but these two dudes, man, are whoo. I'm excited. I was excited when I got the new Wolf gift.
Let's think about this, 3-4 years down the line. Jackson or Austin throwing to Justice Williams.
Rock paper.
Throwing to Justice Williams and Jason Robinson and the receivers that we have coming in just and Rashid and Keith Reynolds and Tayshaun.
Imo, Hercules.
I mean, let's not. Don't get it twisted. Michael Penix Jr. is a special quarterback in the history of Washington football, and it would be unfair to Austin, to Dylan, to Austin Johnson, to William Haskell, to expect anybody is going to be a peer of Michael Penix Jr. But with this coaching staff and with their ability to identify talent at these positions, the drop-off is not going to be all that far.
If anything,
this isn't going to be, and shouts to Cody Pickett, new member of the Husky Hall of Fame. This is not going to be Cody Pickett to Casey Paws. That's not what's going to happen here.
Oh my God. You just gave me Patusda. I got PTSD from that one. Oh my God. It is not.
That is not what's happening here. And shout out to the whole new Husky Hall of Fame class, including Cody and Ashley Charters and Paige McKenzie and I think Krista Van Zandt and some great, great Huskies got inducted this past weekend. But let's.
Cody was one of the first people that I could identify. Like, I wasn't just young seeing purple and the people running around on the screen. Cody was one of the earlier people that I could actually identify as a player. Yeah, for sure.
I had a moment like in the zone earlier this year, like before Boise State, somebody walked by me and I'm like, they look familiar. And then like I'd had a beer or two in the zone to pregame. And then like 5 seconds later, like he reacted to the fact that I recognized him, but my synapses were not firing enough. And I'm like, shit, that was Cody Pickett.
Damn.
I was like,
sign my socks.
I know you look familiar, but I don't know why. And then I'm like, ah, shit, that was Cody Pickett. let's go ahead and move into to our thoughts about what's going to happen at the library on Saturday. Number 5 Washington is a 26.5-point favorite going down to the library, the farm, the lumberyard, whatever you want to call it. The over under for this game,
the lumberyard. That's a good one. That's too loud.
Over under is 60.5. I think this is also a little bit of a get right game for us. I don't think Stanford has the athletes to do what Arizona State did to disrupt our running game or our passing game. So I think this is a much better, cleaner, more satisfactory performance. That said, I also still don't think we're going to completely be fine. With all due respect to the team, the players, the coaching staff, I think we've seen enough over the last few weeks that this is not the same offensive juggernaut. You're not going to just, oh, Jalen McMillan's out, Jeremy Bernard is out. You're just not going to be able to hurt the opposition in as many ways or give them enough oh shit moments. That said, I think we score a lot. I don't think Stanford does because our defense is legit. Our defense is levels above all, you know, what Stanford was facing when they came back from 29 points down and their receiver was mossing dudes left, was mossing Travis Hunter left and right, to be honest.
Jeez.
But I think Stanford scores some. I think Washington scores more. But I think this one to me is going to be like a, until I see us cover, I'm not going to say that we will. I'm going to say 38-17.
Hey, bro, that's crazy. I literally have the exact same score. And then, I have the exact same score. And then in my head, I was like, add a field goal for them or add a field goal for us. Okay, nobody has been scoring 20, so no. And I'll drop that 17. So maybe like 41 for us? Nah, we're not scoring 40 points. And then I was like, huh, you said the over-under was 60? And I was like, nope. I got the same exact score, 38-17, under the 60.5, right? Under the 60.5, a 21-point win, so we don't even cover the spread. Yeah, I think we get right. To be honest, I feel like we get more, I don't want to, pro style may be the wrong word for it. I think we take our explosives, but I do think we get a little bit more of the run game here. I think we may be a little bit more play action, a little more ball control, whether it's with the run game or pass game, a little more of focus and priority on efficiency. I think there's going to be a lot of the details that Grubb is going to DeBoer is going to have Grubb focus on again. I think we have kind of gotten away from a lot of the details. And I do think that, you know, the fact that a little bit more of the drives are going to be methodical. I think we lose a possession here or lose a possession there, kick a field goal here instead of a touchdown there. So, yeah, I got 38-17.
Great minds think alike.
And twins.
It's been, well, here's why things I think went so screwy last week is the last, like, prior to last week, the for about a 3 or 4 week stretch, I either had the same score prediction as Trevor Mueller from Fourth and Inches or from with Coach V. Last week, I was out on a limb kind of by myself with the score prediction, and we saw how well that turned out. So all's back right in the Husky universe, and that another great Husky. Or a great Husky, is on a similar wavelength with me. So we good.
And it could easily be like a 4-touchdown game for Mike, 1 touchdown for our running back, mm-hmm. you know, like Dylan or Will or Sam or something. And then a nice little field goal.
And Grady's been nails. Like,
he's been nails.
But Grady has been very, very solid. He was arguably the offensive player of the game for us last week.
Right? I just saw a tweet where he's one of the better kickers in the Pac-12 in regards to I think PFF.
Our grade. Special team. Yeah, but yeah. Our special teams in general. Because, and part of it, and not an underrated part of it, as we look not to look ahead to USC in 2 weeks if Zachariah Branch is healthy, but one of the ways to mitigate the threat that Zachariah Branch presents in the kickoff return game, it's just kick the ball out ball into the end zone, and Grady has shown time and again that he can do that. So,
what he 3 for 3, including career long 47 yarder, scored 9 points, limited the Pack's best kick returner to 1 return for 14 yards. Oh yeah, he had a stellar game last week.
All right, any final thoughts, Hood?
I do want to give a huge shout out to all of our Husky homies out there, DJ Mims. Shout out you, man, and the job you're doing at Mercer Island. Absolutely. For sure. You know, obviously, you got all of us rooting for you, brother. So keep balling out, man.
Agreed. Couldn't
great leader of men out there.
Can't echo that enough. I'll also shout out, like, I know that ETC's had some really good stuff going on with UW Tacoma. Some of their stuff has been absolute fire. I haven't been down there yet. I need to go a little on a little shopping trip.
It's far from where you at.
Yeah, if you guys have ever opened up a mountain based location, I'm there. But shouts to you guys. Shouts to our listeners. Shouts to Husky Nation. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow tomorrow when you hear this with another episode with some more of our crew of shenanigan makers. Thanks for listening. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.